Hello, Margaret?
Oh, hey, it's Ben with Margaret, yeah. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. I want to patch you in if you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, hold on one second. You have 10-15 minutes, okay?
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello, Margaret. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm having a mini fan freakout moment because I have been watching you for quite some time, ma'am. And I love your stuff. I love what you do. And honestly, I got to be honest. It was kind of hard for me to think of questions to ask because I listen to a lot of your podcast, Monsters of Talk, with Jim Short.
Oh.
So,
that's great. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Is that coming back?
Nice. No. I don't know. I'm so busy. So it's hard to do podcasting. But so I admire you for doing it. It's a lot of work.
Yes, it is. But, you know, moments like these make it very, very rewarding when you get a chance to sit up and talk to some of the people you admire, like yourself, like I admire you. And you're going to be in
thank you.
All right. I mean, you're going to be in town very shortly. You're going to be at the soundboard, you know, stand up. Like,
mm-hmm.
I've been watching your stand up for a while. You started around, like, when you were 15, 14.
Yes, very young, and so I guess now would be my 33rd year.
Jeez.
It's great. I know it's a long time.
It don't seem like it, though.
Well, I guess it goes by pretty quickly. It's been really fun, you know. I really love this job, and so it's something that I've always really been glad to devote my life to.
Well, one thing I was trying to prepare for, like, while coming up with, you know, talking with you, I actually talked to my wife, and we figured out, just talking to her, like, most people who come to your shows may not be traditional comedy fans, you know, because
mm-hmm.
you're involved in a lot of projects. Can you kind of, like, pinpoint where your fan base is coming from on a particular night? Like, well, that person knows me from stand-up, but that person knows me from Drop Dead Diva, that person knows me from E, you know, can you do that?
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of different places that people have seen me work, but I think a lot of times people come see me do comedy, at least initially, for me, I was making a space in a comedy club really safe for people who don't necessarily feel safe in comedy clubs. That's Asian Americans, people of color in general, women, gays. Oftentimes we're the butt of jokes in comedy clubs. And so you feel a little bit under fire when you go to a comedy club and you think, like, oh, the comic's going to make fun of me or make racial jokes or something that you don't feel comfortable with. And so I was bringing comedy to people who didn't feel like they were okay in a club.
I mean, yeah, that's like your brand of comedy, and it's more honest. If I mean, for lack of a better term, you go on stage, you tell the truth, but and you just lay it all out there. Is there any like off-limit topics? Because you make it fun for everybody, but you hit some angles where some people could be offended, I guess, if they take it a certain way. Are there anything you just don't want to talk about?
No, I think that's the goal. You want to be able to kind of push boundaries and take risks as a comic. That's always really important. And my favorite comics did that. You know, that's like Joan Rivers or Richard Pryor or Bill Hicks or people who were not necessarily afraid to offend people. That's kind of a good thing.
Okay, I mean, a lot lately, like, I watched Psycho, and some of your stuff is coming from your own personal history, so,
mm-hmm.
is it that old saying, like, tragedy plus comedy plus tragedy equals time, or?
I think Is it comedy plus
time?
No, it's tragedy plus time.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Tragedy plus times equals comedy. Okay.
So, because comedy, ultimately, humor is a coping mechanism, and so if you utilize that, you know, that it comes forth, you know, it springs from suffering, so it makes that suffering somehow valuable or worthwhile.
Okay, I mean, you do talk about a lot of your personal stuff, you talk a lot about your parents, and just sort of like something I kind of sort of deal with. I'm always going to be a 5-year-old little boy in my mom's eyes, regardless of whatever I do. And I kind of see that in your comedy, that where you're your mom's little girl, you're your dad's little girl. And like, just even now on a big stage that you're on, you're still, you know, the kid.
Yes, that's essential too. I think that as a comedian, it's important to retain that childlike sensibility. It's an innocence also that I think is really important to bring to it. So there's a lot of things, but it's important to remember that child self that you are.
One thing I want to touch on a bit, I kind of mentioned it earlier, like your time with Fashion Police, because that's starting up now. I think you guys, what is that like, man? It's like, because that is a world where they don't like a lot of jokes. Not a lot of jokes in the fashion.
Well, it's something that Joan Rivers really loved doing. You know, I know that was her favorite job, doing Fashion Police, and she really enjoyed that as a way to bring humor into fashion. And you know, now that she's gone and I'm there, it's important for me to carry on her legacy. You know, I'm there with her daughter Melissa and her friends, and I want to make it so that something that she would have been proud of. You know, I think it's very important to honor her legacy. So I really have a great time doing it. It's not a world that I'm really that familiar with, but I do know what I like, and I do know some things about the art and craft of it. So I enjoy it.
Like, I watched the Oscars wrap-up with Tim Gunn was on that one. I love Tim Gunn, but he strikes me as very intimidating because, well, I wear a lot of T-shirt and jeans, and I don't know that's his thing, you know?
Me too. I mean, I'm definitely casual, so he's wonderful, though. He's got a great sense of humor. He's got a really distinctive point of view, and I really enjoy being around him and learning from him. He's really a funny guy, too.
And I remember, I'm kind of showing my age a little bit. I think you had a clothing line a while ago.
Yes. I also designed a jumpsuit for Beta Brand last year, and it's something that I dabble in. I don't really design that much, but I think it's a fun world to just sort of dip into.
I mean, ma'am, you wear a lot of hats. I mean, we talked about your comedy, we talked about fashion. You are on one of my favorite shows that ended too soon, Drop Dead Diva. That was cool. You're on.
Oh, thank you.
You have a reoccurring role on Dr. Ken. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's weird because I've watched you just plain watching TV evolve from the all-American girl, no pun intended, to now this freedom-based badass you become. Like, now you've been taking shots in the political world and became a strong activist for many different organizations. I mean, and you kind of, like, interweave all of these things. How does that work?
I think you just, you know, you go at the different jobs. Like, I get these jobs as acting, which is great, and I'm really grateful for that, and I enjoy that. And political stuff, I'm very passionate about. I'm passionate about equal rights. I'm passionate about gay rights. I'm passionate about Black Lives Matter. I'm passionate about so many different issues that are important to everyone. So I think that's something where I'm just very driven to make a difference and make a change. And then you know, you just get opportunities along the way, like Fashion Police came about, and I was excited to do that. So I just, I'm really grateful for everything I get to do.
Even with that, like, I watched the 12 Days of Rage, listened to the song I Want to Kill My Rapist. Now recording artists. Like, you got two albums under your belt. You just finished up American Myth.
Yes.
And that comes
and
out.
And it'll be out on April 26th.
Like, let's get into that a little bit. The album, like, you work with some heavy hitters on that. Can you walk me into a little bit about American Myth?
Well, it's a lot of different kinds of songwriting. I mean, I worked on it as a composer, which was exciting because I learned how to do that from people I'd worked with before, like John Bryan and Andrew Bird and Ani DiFranco. And so learning from really great people helped me to grow, and working with Fiona Apple helped me to be a better vocalist, and I collaborated on this record with Garrison Starr, who's a tremendous singer-songwriter, so I have a lot of wonderful people helping me, which is great.
Okay, and you're also, I mean, do you sleep? Can I just ask that, do you sleep, or is there a thing where you just don't, you just chose not to, I guess?
No, I do. I really treasure that. I really need it. I think also traveling a lot, that makes it a little bit hard. So I do have a bit of jet lag caused insomnia from that, because I'm always kind of everywhere. So that's something that maybe I like kind of go into work mode because I get so tired.
Also, like, you're working on the Highlands. It's in development right now with Amazon. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's about a Korean family who is involved in the medical marijuana boom in California. Where in even Los Angeles, just LA, there's huge amounts of money being made by people in the marijuana business, and so it's a very, very big thing. It's almost like a gold rush. So my show with Amazon is about sort of like that. It's sort of like a Dallas, but instead of oil, it's weed.
Okay.
And about people getting very, very wealthy very quickly.
All right. Well, you got my attention, and I can't wait for it. Hey, I got Prime. I'm waiting on it.
Yeah. Cool.
In your downtime, look, you're a bit of a tattoo enthusiast, and I'm using that very lightly. Like, where are you tatted? Like, I saw your arms, and I think, Wendy Williams, you got one on your stomach. Is it any more? Am I missing?
I have them all over. I have them all on my back and my legs and my stomach and everywhere. I mean, I think now I've sort of run out of space, so, you know, and if you're an actor, too, you can't really get them on your hands or, you know, anything like your neck or anything that's really visible, so I have to slow down a bit, but I really do love the art form. I think it's really exciting.
Like, how many do you have?
Probably about 80 of them.
Damn.
You broke them all down into smaller sort of sections, at least, there's always, I guess you could sort of, there's always sort of the connections, so they're all sort of together, too, so it could be considered one big one.
Okay, any regrets on some of the tattoos that you got?
No, I really work with the best artists in the world. I mean, people like Ed Hardy to Kat Von D to Mr. Cartoon, and everybody who has tattooed me is really tremendous and accomplished and you know, also a good friend. So
Whoa, you said Ed Hardy, like the shirts?
Yeah, like the shirts, yeah. John Ed Hardy was my first tattooer.
Seriously?
So, yeah, he's wonderful. And he brought the sort of Japanese style of tattooing from Japan to America, and so he's a legend in the tattoo world.
I see. Well, obviously, he had, because you're running out of space, a great canvas, because his art is being seen pretty much everywhere now.
Yes,
All right. That's pretty cool. I know you got to get out of here. We're going to let you go. I do have one question, just as a Monsters of Talk podcast listener. I have to ask. I don't know if this is urban legend. I don't know if you lived in a haunted house.
Yes, in Peachtree City in Georgia, and it was not just a haunted house, it was like a poltergeist, so there was a lot of activity there. It was really scary, and I went back with a psychic who told me that there was like various weird animal sacrifice that was happening in the backyard that opened a portal to something. I don't know if any of this is real, but it was really scary to live there. So I just am glad I don't live there anymore.
Okay, alright. And a lot of stuff, like, I'm trying not to, like, we play games on the show. Just one quick one. If you want to do this, cool. If not, we totally understand. You've had a lot of public relationships, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we're gonna throw it out there. If you don't want to do it, that's cool. A quick game of FMK. I'm pretty sure you played that before. I listened to the podcast.
Yes.
All right, okay. FMK. You can swear. Yes, you can swear. Fuck, marry, kill.
Okay.
With three people that you've been in the public eye with. Let's just throw them out there. Tarantino, Mark Maron, or Chris Isaac. And I like all three of them, so I'm very curious what you would pick. And I'll play with you. I don't care.
I love them all. They never, I mean, you know, they're all very different, but I do adore them all. So I guess I would marry them all.
Oh, I see you want to put your own little spin on the game. I don't think you know how the game is played. Okay. You know what? We'll let it slide. We'll let it slide because you're awesome. That's why.
Thank you. Thank you. So are you.
And I know you got to get out of here, but once again, you're going to be at the Soundboard on April 17th. The album comes out the 29th of April. April is just your month. Let's just put it out there.
Yes, it is.
But Margaret, thank you so much for just making the time to call the podcast. As a podcast, I'm pretty sure you know what this is like.
Yes.
So
thank you.
And out of all your projects, I really selfishly kind of want Monsters to Talk back, because I kind of want to hear the backstory of all the stuff you're doing now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. You got one fan out there, but, you know, four Monsters to Talk. And tell Jim, if you see him, I love his stuff, too.
Okay, well.
All right, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.